Hi, this is Jillian. Those of us here at Court Junkie have a new podcast called Civil, where we dive into fascinating civil cases. Like in the case of a principal who took it upon himself to hypnotize students as a hobby. Then many of those students ended up dead. Or when a man was publicly and wrongfully accused of being the I-10 freeway shooter. We'll also be covering popular civil cases you've likely heard of, like O.J. Simpson and Alex Jones versus the parents of Sandy Hook.
This is AC. I have O.J. in the car.
Sandy Hook, it's got inside job written all over.
Hosted by me, Jillian Jalali, researched by Nicole Gusmerati, and written by Matt Stroud and Nick Kepler. If you like following criminal trials like I do, I think you will love Civil. Subscribe to us now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 292 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me as always is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How about yourself?
You know, I'm hanging in there this week. Week to week, day to day, it's how we live our life, man.
You know, I was just thinking about the intro, how much I like it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember when I used to have lyrics to that, and I noticed you never really added the lyrics in.
No, I didn't think they played well. They weren't as good as what you thought they were.
I thought they were amazing.
You thought they were amazing. I thought they were so-so, bordering on subpar, bordering on horrendous.
I just repeated the, you know, true crime all the time unsolved, just in...
It was a little annoying, but I know you did really like them. Hey, let's go ahead and give our Patreon shout outs. We had Eileen Messina.
Hey, Eileen.
DD Peets.
What up, DD?
Kimberly jumped out at our highest level.
Hey, Kimberly.
John Engler.
Well, I appreciate that, John.
Radio Ranch Camp.
Well, thank you, Radio Ranch.
Abigail.
What's up, Abigail?
Todd Albrot.
Hey, Albrock.
Tamika Alston jumped out at our highest level.
Awesome, Tamika.
Rose Smith.
Hey, Smith.
Sheila.
What's going on? Sheila.
Aiden Harnett.
Hey, Aiden.
Garrison Schaefer.
What's going on? Garrison sounds like a Wild West name.
Well, what about compared to Kerry Wyatt?
Well, that's definitely a Wild, Wild West
name. I know.
That's, mean name.
I was looking at the next name, Kerry Wyatt. We had Moa Moorberg jump out at our highest level.
Moa just sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot. Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Cassandra.
Hey, there's Cassandra.
Christian Shook.
What's up, Shook?
Ryan Nellums.
Hey, Nellums.
And last but not least, Kelsey.
Oh, man, Kelsey.
So we appreciate all that new Patreon support. And then if we go back into the vault, this week we selected Anna.
Hey, appreciate that, Anna.
And we definitely appreciate the people that have stuck with us, you know, for a very long time.
We do.
Through Patreon. We had PayPal donations, a big donation for a happy birthday to Stefan from Jacqueline.
Look at Jacqueline saying happy birthday to Stefan.
And we had a donation from Sherry Rohrer.
Hey, Sherry.
And Alana Zimmel.
Well, thank you, Zimmel.
So thanks to everyone. All right, Gibbs, right now we have an episode out on True Crime All the Time. It's about a man named Thomas Meek who called to report that his stepbrother, Sean, killed a 14-year-old girl named Sonia Son. And this is a very different type of episode because, you know, basically it becomes Thomas saying Sean killed her.
Yeah.
And Sean saying Thomas killed her.
He said.
It is that type of case for sure. But it's out right now. Make sure you check it out. All right, buddy. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved?
I am ready.
In 1989, two toddlers, Christopher Dansby and Shane Walker, went missing from the Martin Luther King Jr. Towers playground in Harlem, New York. Their case remains unsolved, and the boys have never been found. Christopher Milton Dansby was just 2 years old when he went missing. Christopher was born on March 30th, 1987. His parents are Allison Dansby and Milton Westcott Robbins. Christopher has an older brother whose name is LeVon. At the time of his disappearance, Christopher was talking. You know, he could say things like mama. He could say his older brother's name.
Those are always fun events, you know?
It's a fun time. It really is for a parent. It's also a challenging time.
Yeah.
But it's also a very fun and rewarding time.
I wonder what your first word was. Wildcats?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. It probably had something to do with food because I was a very hungry kid.
Oh, were you?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Christopher's nickname was Choo Choo, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Allison told Unsolved Mysteries that they spent a lot of time outside together. They went to the park a lot. Shane Anthony Walker was only 19 months old when he went missing. Shane was born on December 7th, 1987. His parents are Rosalie Glover and James Edward Walker. According to CNN.com, Rosa said about Shane, he smiled all the time. He only laughed when tickled, but he liked teddy bears and monkeys. Rosa and Shane's father briefly owned a pet chimpanzee.
Well, that's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. Can it also be dangerous? Aren't chimpanzees sometimes dangerous? Don't they have teeth and stuff?
Yeah, they are dangerous.
I mean, if they're not properly trained or...
Yeah, need to be careful.
That's what I thought. But apparently Shane liked to feed the chimpanzee bananas through his cage. So he must have been a pretty good chimp, I guess. The family also went on a trip to Disney World before Shane went missing. Shane loved the rides, but he was scared of Mickey Mouse.
Man, a lot of kids are scared of those characters there at Disney.
Well, you know, if you think about a 19-month-old, okay, those characters are pretty big.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't say Mickey is scary to most, but, you know, to a little kid, big things are scary.
Yeah.
Big creatures.
Big ears.
Big ears. Christopher and Shane lived just two floors apart with their mothers in the same apartment building in Harlem, New York, called the Martin Luther King Jr. Towers, located at 41 West 112th Street. Now, their mothers didn't know each other, but the Daily News reported that Rose's niece had a falling out with Allison's sister over a guy a decade earlier.
So it's like that...
6 degrees of separation?
Yeah, like with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. How do I know what you're thinking?
I don't know.
Because you haven't said a word, but for some reason, telepathy, I don't know what it is. I know what you're about ready to say or trying to say.
Yeah. What am I trying to say right now?
A bad word about me because I had to jump in and say what you were about to say.
Maybe. Maybe not.
But you're right. I mean, this is kind of one of those small world type of things, you know, where... these people are living so close together, just two floors apart. They don't know each other.
Yeah.
But they have kind of this tenuous connection through other people in their family. On May 18th, 1989, two-year-old Christopher Dansby went missing from the Martin Luther King Jr. Towers playground at Lenox Avenue and 114th Street. Now, most sources said 114th Street. There were some sources that said it was at 113th Street, but I'm going with 114th because that's what most sources said. Christopher was with his mother, his grandmother, Elizabeth Manley, two aunts, an adult cousin, some other adults, and at least five other children.
Sounds like a busy day.
A big party, too, to, you know, big group of people. Allison Dansby left the park to go to the store to buy food. She didn't have a stroller with her, so she left Christopher at the park with his relatives. According to the Daily News, Allison's sister, Addie Manley, watched Christopher and his brother, LeVon.
I mean, nothing out of the ordinary there, right? People do that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, this is nothing where you would say, oh, I can't believe that, you know, this mother would do that. She's got tons of relatives there, family, friends. This is much different than... you know, a story of somebody leaving a toddler in the back seat while they run in and buy, you know, a six pack of beer.
Right.
We're not talking about, you know, that scenario at all in my eyes. According to a 1989 Newsday article, Christopher was playing ball with his 7-year-old cousin Elton next to a public restroom when his grandmother Elizabeth last saw him. She was talking to a friend. She told Newsday, We turned around and Christopher was gone. And how many times have we heard that?
Too many to recount.
And it's a very, very sad refrain. You know, when you think about what people probably recall is kind of like a split second thing. You see the child 1 minute, the next minute you turn around and the child is gone. You know, you and I have often talked about experiences in department stores and shopping centers and things like that, where, you know, for a split second, your whole world crumbles.
It does.
When you turn around and your child is gone. Now, luckily, most of the time, you find them very quickly. They're in the next aisle. They've just wandered off just a little bit, but it is a very scary thing.
It really is.
And unlike a lot of the things we talk about in our true crime episodes, most parents have experienced this. It happens to the best parents in the world.
It certainly does. I think, like you said, so many people can relate to that.
She said, when I didn't see him, I said, where's Christopher? It was no longer than 5 or 10 minutes. Elton was out there. He doesn't think about anybody when he's out there playing. He says he doesn't know what happened to Christopher. He must have walked back through the project. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Elizabeth told AP News that she turned her head for a minute and my grandchild was gone.
Well, like you said, it's all it takes. Just takes a few seconds.
When Allison returned to the park about 20 minutes later, she learned that Christopher was gone. So that's a gut punch.
It is. It's not like today where you'd probably get a cell phone call right away. You know, they didn't have cell phones. You had to wait.
Yeah, they weren't going to probably be able to reach her at the store or anything like that. Everyone looked. They couldn't find him. Christopher's relatives told Allison that he was playing with a red ball. The Charlie Project website states that he had not brought a red ball to the park, and a red ball was not found anywhere nearby.
Yeah, but if the family said he was playing with a red ball, why would they lie?
Oh, that's not what I was thinking at all. I was thinking that maybe the red ball was used to lure him, and that's why nobody knew where it came from, and they never found it.
But that makes good sense to me.
That's what I was thinking. Carolyn Manley, Christopher's aunt, said in the 2020 Unsolved Mysteries episode on the case, I had him 1 minute and someone else had him the next. It wasn't like one person was in the park with all these kids. It was like five of us in the park watching the kids. And out of all the kids, Choo Choo was the only one missing. Christopher's brother, LeVon Dansby, said in a 1991 Daily News article, we was playing and Choo Choo got lost. I didn't see him. I called my mommy. I said, I don't see Choo Choo. He just got lost where he was sliding and playing on the swings. I felt mad. I think somebody took him. I want newspapers to write about him. If somebody has him, if they see that he's Choo Choo, they can bring him to my house with my name on him.
That's just a brother missing his brother.
That's a freaking tearjerker.
Yeah.
Man, to think about this young boy saying this, you know, about his brother. Allison and her family searched the park that day, and they asked if anyone had seen a little boy matching Christopher's description. Allison called the New York Police Department, and officers began searching for him. They canvassed the 10-building Kings Towers complex on the night that Christopher went missing. They went door to door asking residents about Christopher.
So they're doing what they should be doing.
Well, and they jumped on it very quickly. I'm assuming, Gibbs, because of this young boy's age.
Yeah, I mean, he's a toddler, right?
Right. Now, if he was 17, 18, 19, we might be telling a different story.
Sure.
But you're never going to hear police say that a 19-month-old maybe with friends,
no,
or went out and don't worry because they'll be back later.
There's only a few 19-month-old that I know that could have done, besides myself.
You could have handled it,
yeah.
But you're just not going to hear that from police, and you shouldn't. According to retired NYPD Inspector Ken Lindahl, who appeared on Unsolved Mysteries, a dog followed Christopher scent south on Lenox to 110th Street, and then the dog lost the scent. Lindahl also said there was a park entrance on Lenox Avenue, and there was a hole in the fence that a lot of kids used. There were many entrances and exits to the park, and it's located on a very busy street.
So it sounds like anybody could have come and left and plenty of access.
I think that's what he's saying, right? There were a lot of places where somebody could have taken Christopher out of this park. There was a lot more than just one entrance and exit.
And then you got to wonder if the dog lost a scent. Was that because the child was placed in a vehicle?
Well, I think a lot of times that's what you think. Because how does the scent just disappear? Well, it can disappear if someone's placed in a vehicle and then that vehicle drives away, right?
Right.
A dog's not going to be able to follow that scent. On May 19th, 1989, the police searched a 24 square block area of Harlem with dogs, a helicopter, and a scuba diving team. Over 70 city and housing authority police searched for Christopher at the Taft Houses, a housing project across the street. They also had the scuba diving unit search a pond at the north end of Central Park. Custodial workers at King's Towers searched through the dumpster. There was a $1,000 reward for information on Christopher's whereabouts. So, you know, I do believe that his disappearance was taken very seriously.
Yes.
It does seem as though a good deal of resources were put into finding him.
Yeah, it seems like all hands on deck.
It does seem that way. Now, you could always have more people, so you can always make the case for that.
You could.
But it doesn't seem as though it was dismissed. I will say that. According to Newsday, the Bureau of Child Welfare was also involved in the case. Captain Michael Ficito of the Housing Authority said, whether there was negligence involved, we don't know. And I think, you know, you could take that statement a couple of different ways. You could take it on face value, just as they don't know. They haven't looked into it. They don't have any facts.
Right.
Or you can take it as though they're looking into whether negligence was involved, kind of thinking there was. But from the story that we've told so far and kind of the facts we gathered and as we know them, it doesn't seem as though there was what I would term negligence. Should you be watching the child at all times? Yeah, I get that. But is it natural for people to turn around when they're in the company of a bunch of family and friends?
Sure it is.
And think, oh, we're among family and friends. Everybody's safe. And
yeah.
The search continued on May 20th. The police searched door to door. They had aviation and canine units on standby. On May 22nd, papers reported that the police wanted to question a man about Christopher's disappearance. A sketch of what this man might look like was published in the papers. A 1989 Daily News article states that the man was not considered a suspect, but the police believed he was near the playground when Christopher disappeared. According to the Daily News, a police spokesman said, "We think he may have been picking up another child. He may have seen something."
Well, they think they might have an eyewitness. Maybe if they can talk to him, he can say, "You know, I did see that child that matches that description or that picture that you have.
And then I saw this man or this woman or whatever." Now, here's my question to you. If your picture is in the paper or an artist's sketch of you is in the paper and police say, "We want to talk to you, but you're not a suspect. We think you were just there." Do you believe that?
I would probably not believe that.
Yeah, I just wonder how many people would be very leery of coming forward, because what are the police going to say? "Hey, we think this is the person who took them. Please come forward."
Yeah, we know this is a picture of you. Just come on in and see.
Yeah,
this.
No, they're going to say, "Ah, don't worry about it. We don't think you're a suspect. We just want to talk to you." Maybe the whole time they think you're a suspect. So I'd be pretty cautious, to be honest with you, whether I had done something or not. And I hate to say that, because I always would think I'd want to help if I could shed any light on what happened to a child that's gone missing. But at the same time, I would be very leery that police were trying to pin this thing on me that I had nothing to do with.
Probably more like, is there an 800 number I can call you on and just tell you?
Anonymously?
Yeah.
The man was described as black, 5'9", and clean shaven with a mustache and a large pink scar on the right side of his face. The sketch of the man shows him with dreadlocks. According to the Charlie Project, a 7-year-old boy living in the neighborhood told the police that he saw Christopher walking on 111th Street later that day. This young boy said that Christopher was with a thin black man with dreadlocks between the ages 25 and 30 and said he was about 6 foot tall. So number one, that's a pretty good description from a 7-year-old.
It really is. You wonder how much he was led to those.
Yeah. Because for a 7-year-old to just come out and say, you know, this man was between 25 and 30. He was 6 foot tall. I don't see that happening.
No, I don't either.
Now, could you have police saying, was he this tall? Was he, you know, maybe they've got some other policemen.
Right.
Was he closer to this guy or this guy? Was he as old as this guy? Older, you know?
Yeah, I can see that being more of the
maybe that scenario. That's the way that it could have gone down. True Crime All the Time Unsolved is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep. While you're listening to Gibby and I talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now, getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save over $700 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customer survey who saved with Progressive between June 2020 and May 2021. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. According to Allison on Unsolved Mysteries, Christopher's father lived in Florida at the time he went missing. He came to New York to meet with the police and tell them what he knew. There was no indication that he was involved in Christopher's disappearance.
Well, that's an obvious person of interest, right?
It's somebody that you would have to look at. You know, father who doesn't live with the child, could he have taken him? You have to rule that out.
Yeah, I think so.
Almost 3 months later, another toddler went missing from the same park. On August 10th, 1989, at 5:25 p.m., Shane Walker went missing from the Martin Luther King Jr. Towers playground. According to CNN, Rosa Glover had the day off. She took Shane to the playground in the early evening. Shane was sitting on a park bench with Rosa eating some chips when two children, a brother and sister, aged 5 and 10, approached her and asked to play with Shane. Rosa told them he's young, and they responded, "We don't mind." According to Newsday, Rosa thought this was a little strange because they were several years older than Shane. She allowed the kids, though, to push Shane in a swing, and she watched them from a park bench. They played near a slide. Rosa said about the kids, "I didn't know their names, but I see them in the building, so I wasn't worried when they asked to play with Shane." A man sat beside Rosa and began talking to her. According to a 1989 Newsday article, this was an elderly neighbor. According to CNN, the man started talking about crime and how things happen to children. According to PIX 11, the man also talked about parents not paying enough attention to their children. He talked about kidnapping and showed Rosa some scars he had from fights.
Okay. Talkative neighbor. Some bizarre stuff in there, though.
Yeah. Elderly, you know. But what I got from this is there's a lot of different types of conversations. There's pleasant, you know. How about those Yankees? What do you think about this weather?
Yeah.
You know, there's that type of conversation. And then there's kids are getting kidnapped. And you know, you're talking to a mother with a young child. It just seems like very strange things to say.
Yeah, it's a little spooky.
Yeah, I thought so. According to a 1989 Daily News article, she took her attention away from the kids for no longer than 3 to 4 minutes. And apparently, Rosa turned her head briefly to look at the man's scars. When she turned back, Shane was gone.
Well, it doesn't take long. We know that.
No.
You know, even if kids are just, you know, hiding from you to be funny, or if they just walked off with another kid, it just doesn't take more than a few seconds. So if she turned her head for a few minutes.
But Rosa told Newsday there were no shouts, no screams of mommy. She said, that's the hard part. I didn't hear anything. She also said that she was confused because Shane was a clingy child who fussed when strangers tried to pick him up. She couldn't think of anyone he knew well that would have taken him. So I think you can see where her thinking is kind of right then in that moment. Her thought was it might be hard for a stranger because he was going to cry. He was going to, you know, carry on.
Yeah.
But I can envision some scenarios, as hard as they are to talk about, you know, where an abductor could put his or her hand over the mouth of a child and be gone in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, or like in the case of the earlier child, if you have a red ball that the kid finds fascinating, you roll it past them, they go after it, and they're far enough away from the mom that
nobody sees them.
Nobody sees them, and maybe if they even do make a sound, that they might be far enough away that it's going to blend with all the other noise around you.
But here's the thing. It wasn't only Shane who was gone. The two kids that were playing with him were also gone. Rosa walked around the park looking for Shane. She even searched another nearby playground. When she returned to the King Towers playground, she saw the two children come back into the park through a hole in the wire fence. She asked them where Shane was, and they said they had left him in the park. Now, we said these kids were 5 and 10 years old. There are stories out there of 10-year-olds committing very serious, nasty crimes, murders.
Yeah, we've covered. Even.
We've covered.
Yeah.
But by and large, it's hard to think that a brother and sister, 5 and 10 years old, would hurt this young child. It's hard to think that. It's not impossible.
But we've also have heard about cases where kids are used to help kidnap kids.
Lure other kids.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot to kind of take in here, for sure. At first, Rosa said she thought Shane was with the children, so she didn't panic right away when she didn't see them. But when she saw the older kids without Shane, that's when she became really worried. And then I think the terror set in, Gibbs, when the two children said that they had left him in the park.
No, I get it. I would be terrified too.
Yeah, I think any parent would. Rosa immediately went to the Harlem 29th Precinct Station House to report Shane missing. And within hours, helicopters and police were searching for Shane. So again, here we're seeing police spring into action very quickly. They're using resources to try to find this child. Both of the children who had been playing with Shane were questioned by the police, but were eventually released. The police also interviewed the man who spoke to Rosa and released him. They spoke with some other witnesses and came up with a description of a man that they were seeking. The description was of a black man between the ages of 19 and 24, about 5'8", wearing a yellow shirt and acid washed jeans. You don't see a lot of acid wash jeans today, or maybe you do. Maybe it's come back into style. I don't know because I don't keep up with trends, but you did see a lot of them in 1989.
You do.
And you and I both wore a lot of them.
Maybe they're in my closet still.
Probably still are.
Not that I ever be able to wear them to get back down to that waist size.
But I think one of the things that has to jump out here is, you know, that on some level, these descriptions are fairly close to each other. The height is a little different, but remember, you know, the first description came from a 7-year-old. So 6 foot versus 5'8", but they're somewhat similar. On August 11th, dozens of city and housing officers patrolled the streets with a sound truck to spread information about Shane's description and when he was last seen. So, you know, that's interesting. Thinking back to the time that we're in here, 1989.
Yeah.
There's no Facebook.
No Amber Alerts.
There's no Amber Alert. And there were very few cell phones, right? Who had a cell phone back then? Extremely rich people. I'm assuming it was the big brick phone that people have seen.
Maybe. Yeah, back then.
Maybe even. Yeah. But if there were, that's probably what it was. So very few people had them. So what you see is them driving a truck around, basically talking into, you know, like a big Mr. Microphone.
Yeah, remember those.
And trying to spread information about. Today, that information would hit people's phones in about 10 seconds. That's the difference.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Plus it'd be plastered all over all the news, the...
Well, and there again, 1989, the news was going to come on at what? They probably had a midday.
Yeah.
11, 12, and then they had a 6 o'clock and an 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
I don't know when CNN started. It was probably before that, but they didn't have the 24/7 like they do today. No, obviously.
No, not at all. But back to the Mr. Microphone.
Mm-hmm, I had one.
You're probably one of those guys that would used it a lot, didn't you?
Yeah. Just like in the commercial too, because I used the roller skates.
Oh yeah.
And the headband.
You're like, hey, said, good looking.
I'll be back to pick you up later. Like, there's so many people that have no idea what we're talking about. And then there's people that do that are probably laughing their you know what of.
Yeah, I'm sure you might be able to find that commercial on YouTube.
Oh, I guarantee you can. So the police questioned Rosa and her family members. According to Rosa, the police thought that a family member might have taken Shane from the park. But police eventually concluded that Shane was most likely not abducted by a relative. The police also looked into the two children's parents, but they couldn't find any evidence connecting them to these cases. And I think you said it earlier, Gibbs, and it kind of holds true for almost every case we do. You know, the police kind of work their way from the inside out in a lot of cases, right? If a wife dies, they look at the husband, they look at the boyfriend.
Yeah, you're going to go with the obvious things first, right?
Yeah, the people closest to the victims, and then work your way out. Over 100 detectives questioned residents and searched abandoned buildings for Shane. After Shane went missing, Rosa Glover received a phone call about Shane being buried in an abandoned building. Authorities searched for him in this building, but they didn't find anything. And again, I hate to keep saying it, but you know, this is something that we see all too often, and it's sickening. What we're talking about is absolutely horrible, right? The abduction of children. But then you have someone who reads about it in the newspaper. They see it on a newscast. And for whatever reason, for whatever sick reason, they think, you know what would be fun? To call the mother of one of these missing children and mess with them.
Yeah, give them some false hope.
It's brutal. Who thinks like that?
Unfortunately, there's people that do.
So two abductions of children that happened pretty close together. But at first, the police declined to link the two cases. And really what they said was that they thought the descriptions of the possible suspects were just too different. I said I thought they were fairly close. I mean, obviously there are differences.
Sure.
I mentioned the height. I mentioned the dreadlocks. But I also think that a lot of people don't do well with heights and other characteristics.
We talked about how they most likely brought somebody in to help the child determine what the height of the suspect might have been. I would need that. I just couldn't randomly say, I think they were 6 foot tall.
Yeah, I do think it's very hard when you see somebody, if they're not standing by somebody that, and you know that person's height. Now, if somebody walks next to me or by me, obviously I can tell how tall they are because I know how tall I am.
Right.
But if they're standing all by themselves, unless there's a sign next to them that says what 6 feet tall is, I'm going to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, especially if there's some distance too.
Yeah, and we don't know what that was for this seven-year-old. According to Newsday, Chief of Detectives Robert Colangelo told reporters at a news conference, the descriptions of the possible perpetrators do not match. We do not feel at this time that the same person abducted both children. Colangelo said they were looking for a light-skinned black man seen in the neighborhood when Shane went missing. He was wearing a yellow shirt and stone-washed jeans. According to Newsday, on August 13th, the police finished a 50-square-block first sweep of the area where the boys went missing. Captain Daniel McKenna of the Manhattan Detective Bureau said that the disappearances were apparently but not definitely related to each other. Nothing has given us a definite lead. There are people that we want to talk to that were seen in the park, but there is no one out there who saw anyone take a child. McKenna also said there is nothing to indicate that the children's families have any knowledge of the disappearance. So there's a little bit of a change here.
There is.
From no link to apparently but not definitely related to each other.
Why not just use the word maybe?
Yeah, apparently not definitely sounds a little strange.
It does.
According to the Daily News, on August 14th, 1989, the police did link the two cases. The Manhattan chief of detectives said the cases may be a part of a conspiracy to steal or sell babies. Manhattan chief of detectives Ronald Fenrick said whoever abducted these children is related by some type of conspiracy to steal the children or in selling the children. So this is just a day later, and things are changing rapidly.
Sure, yeah. Seems like they must be having some internal information coming in and making that decision.
Well, see, that's the thing. They don't say what information is leading them to, you know, this theory. According to an August 16th, 1989 New York Times article, this theory perplexed some officials of child adoption services who observed that it was not difficult to adopt a black child in New York. Chief Fenrick told reporters who questioned him about this, someone who wants a baby, who is not qualified to adopt a baby, might steal a baby or hire someone to do so. Okay, both of those things could be true.
Sure, we've heard stories of that before. People going into hospitals and taking a baby because they wanted a baby back before they put all those security protocols that you go through now when you have a baby at a hospital.
And it also could be true, and I assume it is, if this came from child adoption services, that it was not difficult in 1989 to adopt a black child in New York. And that's why I think I said, you know, both of those things could be true. But like the chief said, what if you had someone who knew they would not be eligible to adopt a child?
Yeah.
Could they resort to stealing a child? Sure.
Sure they could.
I think so. Elaine Rosenfeld, executive director of Louise Wise Services, told the AP in an August 16th, 1989 article, it's hard to imagine. There is a black market for white babies, but for black babies, I don't think so. All right, that's a tough statement.
It is.
But is it wrong? Is it incorrect? Or was it incorrect in 1989? I think that's the question. It's a tough statement to say and a tough statement to hear. But you have to determine the veracity because it could be, you know, a component to this case.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
If the chief is coming out and saying there could be a conspiracy here to steal babies and sell them. Well, is there or is there not a market? Or was there? I'm saying is, but we're talking about back in 1989. The AP reported that Chief Fenrick said, no one that we have found yet has seen anybody with the child, taking the child by the hand, carrying it, leading it, taking it through a fence, or leaving the playground. Two black men, similar only in their dreadlock hairstyles, were being sought for questioning. But other than that, he really didn't give much in the way of details. True Crime All the Time Unsolved is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming. Like when your favorite podcast is playing and the person next to you is talking and your car fan is blasting. all while you're trying to find the perfect parking spot. But then again, sometimes multitasking is easy, like quoting with Progressive Insurance. They do the hard work of comparing rates so you can find a great rate that works for you, even if it's not with them. Give their nifty comparison tool a try, and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy. All you need to do is visit Progressive's website to get a quote with all the coverages you want, like comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection. Then you'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare. So it's simple to choose the rate and coverages you like. Press play on comparing auto rates. Quote at progressive.com to join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Catherine Uncino, director of the adoption department at Spence Chapin, told the AP, "I have not heard of kidnapping any children of that age to satisfy the wishes of adoptive couples. I can't picture the end result of a kidnapping being an adoption. People have used babies as fronts for illegal activities. Children are being sold for drugs." Then I was a little unsure of what she meant by this statement. I'm thinking she means that an adoptive couple is unlikely to have somebody kidnap a baby for them. That's what I think she's saying.
Yeah.
But is it unlikely that someone who wants a child for themselves would take one? And I don't know that it is.
I mean, I think if you want something bad enough,
some people will do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
No matter how horrible it may be.
Sadly, but true.
According to the Daily News, Fenrick pointed out the similarities in the two cases, saying, "Although we have different descriptions, we're not excluding the possibility he is the same man." So they are kind of flipping back and forth, I think. And maybe it depends on who is saying this stuff. But, you know, it went from "we don't think" to "we think it could be," "we think the descriptions are different," now "we think it could possibly be the same man."
I think you have to keep your options for it.
Well, that's something that you and I say all the time. Why close something off so quickly and just, you know, and be so absolute about it and say, "it can't possibly be this"? Doesn't that hurt an investigation? And I would answer that, yeah, I think it does in a lot of cases. The same way that getting tunnel vision and fixating on one person to the exclusion of others hurts cases. The police noted six similarities between the two cases. Christopher and Shane lived in the same building at King Towers. Christopher and Shane went missing from the same playground. They went missing from the same area of the playground. And they both went missing on a Thursday, and both around the same time, around 7 p.m. and 5 p.m. And the sixth similarity was a little strange. The police came out and said that both kids went missing while they were with the same siblings, a boy and a girl aged 5 and 10. Now, we talked about these siblings in the second abduction, but there wasn't anything in the research about them in the first one. But then the police came out and said that they were there in both instances. So I don't know. I put it in because I think it was important, because the police came out and said they thought the children might have been decoys, but then they later said that they questioned them and they didn't find any indication they were involved. So I don't know. It was a little muddy as far as the research went. We mentioned it. Two black men with dreadlock hairstyles were being sought for questioning. Deputy Chief Ronald Fenrick told the New York Times that the police couldn't determine if the same person took the two boys. He said, "we've linked the children's abduction, but not to the same person." According to the Daily News, the brother and sister told the police that they didn't see anyone take Shane or Christopher. Fenrick also said on August 14th, "we've investigated the backgrounds of their parents throughout, and there's no reason to believe they are involved in this conspiracy." So again, here's another article where this brother and sister, 5 and 10-year-old siblings, show up.
Come into play.
In both cases. But there just wasn't any information, specific details around them in the first one. that I found. The Daily News reported that the two children's names were Crystal and Kevin. Crystal said, "I didn't see a man take Shane. I saw him sitting with him. I heard Shane's mother crying, and she was looking for him." Shane's aunt, Barbara Glover, told the Daily News that Rosa tried not to think about the link between the cases. Rose might feel that there is a black market ring out there. She won't get him back. According to Barbara, Rosa was convinced that this brother and sister played a role. Again, we're talking about 5 and 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
According to the New York Times, other theories were abduction by a pedophile or simply by a person who wished to harm a child. Both are very scary. The city offered a $30,000 reward,
which is a really good reward back then.
It's a high dollar amount compared to many rewards that we talk about. We had a $1,000 reward on our TCAT episode, I think.
We did, yeah.
Which, it's not nothing. But again, when you're talking about people coming forward and rolling on someone or giving them up, obviously the higher the dollar amount is, the more likely that is to happen.
Yeah, definitely got to find a way to entice them.
The disappearance of a third baby, 1-month-old Andre Terrence Bryant, who went missing in March 1989, was thought to be connected to Christopher and Shane's cases. On August 15th, 1989, Deputy Chief Fenrick said that they were looking into the abduction of Andre Bryant. He also said that they would review the kidnapping of infant Carlina White in August 1987 from Harlem Hospital. In Brooklyn, New York, Andre Bryant went missing on March 29th, 1989. On the 28th, 25-year-old Monique Rivera was taking her baby Andre and her two older sons for a walk. According to the Charlie Project, she encountered two women driving a 1988 or 1989 burgundy Pontiac Grand Am Sports Edition with tinted windows, possibly with Maryland license plates. My very first car was a 1986 Grand Am.
Really?
Yeah, I loved that car.
I remember those Grand Ams.
One of the women was approximately 30 years old. She was described as a heavyset black woman with a dark complexion wearing sunglasses. The other woman was about 22 years old, either Hispanic or black, with long red hair and a lighter complexion. She was wearing a red leather jacket and white pants. Monique later said that she might have known one of the women from middle school. The two women spoke to her and asked to hold baby Andre. They convinced Monique to go shopping with them. Monique bought an outfit from a store called Canadians. The two women bought her pants and a shirt, then took her home. Monique told her husband, Timothy Bryant, that the women used a fraudulent credit card to buy the clothes. She also said she planned to go shopping with them in White Plains the next day. Timothy's sister, Patricia, agreed to babysit while she went out. On March 29, 1989, Patricia went to Monique's apartment to babysit. The two women called Monique from a nearby payphone and asked her to meet them rather than stop by her apartment. They also insisted that she bring Andre with her. Monique left her two older children with Patricia. Monique was last seen getting into a vehicle with the women outside her apartment at 2 p.m. So obviously there's a little bit of a difference here, right? The Charlie Project says that they asked her to meet them, but then it seems like they must have agreed to come get her since they picked her up outside her apartment. We don't know exactly what happened, but obviously there's something changed because they did end up at her apartment. They may not have gone inside, but they were there. On March 30th, 1989, Monique Rivera's body was found in the woods near Eastchester Bay near City Island Road in the Bronx. She had been hit on the head and strangled. She had defensive wounds. Andre was gone. There were no signs of Monique's friends or their vehicle at the crime scene. The police identified Monique's body after Timothy Bryant published an ad in the paper asking for information about Monique. On April 3rd, the police issued a nationwide bulletin with information about Andre Bryant. A few days after Monique was murdered, a woman named Joan Walker called Monique's apartment and asked to speak with her. When she was told that Monique was dead, she said that was impossible because they had just gone shopping. Now, this caller has never been identified, and the police were not able to link anyone named Joan Walker to Monique's case. But that is very strange.
It is very bizarre.
Andre has never been found. The two women who took Monique out shopping have never been identified. The police believe that Andre might have been sold into an adoption ring. It was also thought that his case could possibly be connected to Shane Walker and Christopher Dansby.
Well, if you think that Shane and Christopher is part of an adoption ring, you can see how they can link that.
I thought it was strange, Gibbs, that they kept using the phrase adoption ring in the research. I get it, what they're trying to say, sure. But how is adoption part of this at all?
No, it's like a kidnapping ring.
It is. According to the Daily News, approximately 1 year after Shane went missing, Rosa went on the Geraldo Rivera show and spoke to psychics who told her that Shane was sold in the black market and adopted. The psychic told Rosa that a Hispanic man driving a station wagon kidnapped Shane, drove him to Philadelphia, where he was sold to a family that loved him. So now when, you know, I hear it that way, somebody is buying a child.
Yeah.
But eventually they are adopting that child as their own. So I maybe it does make more sense than I thought it did originally. I mean, none of this makes sense. Don't get me wrong. The phrasing maybe does make a little bit more sense.
Yeah. It sounds like in that scenario, someone is illegally adopting.
Yes.
No. And they know what they're doing is wrong.
Well, sure. Because they haven't gone through it, through the adoption process. They're going to legally adopt and change the baby's name.
Right.
But they haven't gone through the adoption process and been vetted and all of that. So I don't know. It's got me a little bit confused. But CNN reported that Rosa appeared on the Montel Williams show, where a psychic told her that Shane was being raised by a wealthy family and was well taken care of, and he was learning the piano. Okay, I know I get beaten up sometimes for my takes on psychics.
Sure.
I'm not saying there are not people that have psychic abilities. I'm not saying that. I don't know how many there are. My thought is there are more people claiming they do than actually do. And I'm going to stand by that.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you could say that he knew that, you know, he was in Philadelphia.
Did you just say Philadelphia?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how we say it in Philly.
Is that like Philadelphia cream cheese? And you really emphasize the one part of the word.
Dalphia.
Yeah, Dalphia. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hey, go with it, man.
But I'm just saying, if they could pinpoint that kind of information, or pinpoint that he's now with a very wealthy family.
Why can't they say who the family is? Yeah,
can you not come up with an address?
Well, that's not how the psychic thing works.
I know, but you just wonder.
And again, I hate to be so cynical about it, but I've just seen so many cases, so many instances where they turned out to be wrong.
Yeah.
So are you really psychic if the information that you're giving turns out to be incorrect? And I would argue no.
Yeah, I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
Are you asking me as a question? No, you're right. That's the saying. According to a 1990 Newsday article, two men seen near the playground at the time of the disappearances were found and questioned by police, and their presence was satisfactorily explained. So again, in these unsolved cases, you don't get every morsel, right? You don't get every nugget. You get vague statements, and you have to work with those.
Oh yeah. You're going to be limited.
There were rumors that Christopher was kidnapped because of a drug debt. Allison told the Daily News in 1991, people tried to say I owed money for drugs. That's why my baby was taken. They said a lot of mean things, that I was buying crack when my baby was taken, that I traded my baby for drugs. They're all lies. I've done crack almost 5 years in and out, but I never owed nobody money. I passed a lie detector test. And I do think that would be extremely tough. I get it. She was doing crack. Okay, she was doing crack.
A lot of people were doing crack back in that, that time frame.
She might have been addicted to crack.
Sure.
But if she didn't have anything to do you know, with the disappearance of her child, how tough would that be to have people say that, to see that written, you know, in articles on top of grieving for the loss of your child? You know, he's gone. You don't know where he is.
Yeah, but yet you have to defend yourself to other people.
Now, it was said that the Dansby family took polygraphs, but the results were inconclusive. Shane Walker's father was also questioned and said he took a polygraph test. The police confirmed that he did take a test, but said that the results were inconclusive. Again, my thoughts on polygraph, inconclusive. I think if I took a polygraph, my results would be inconclusive. I have anxiety.
Sure. It's going to throw it off.
Is that not going to throw it off? I'm going to be extremely nervous if you're asking me questions about a murder. If you're asking me if I did something, my anxiety is going to kick in, and I have to think it's going to affect the results of a polygraph test. I don't, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't think so. I remember taking that polygraph test for you here in the studio.
Yeah, you did not do well.
I did not.
Neither Rosa nor Allison were contacted by someone claiming to have the boys, which ruled out, you know, any type of kidnapping for money. The police did extensive searches and they tapped the parents' phone, but that didn't, you know, lead to anything. And I think that's a big one, right? Children are kidnapped for ransom. That happens. But obviously, if no one makes a call, if no one sends a letter, if there is no demand, pretty quickly that gets ruled out and you have to move on to something else. The police looked into drug-related motives, child sacrifice cults, child theft rings. They also searched all 1,800 apartments in the Martin Luther King Towers three times.
It's a lot of units.
It is a lot of units. Now, we're also talking the end of the 80s. So we obviously can't do a case without talking about cults and the occult.
Of course.
Child sacrifice. That was always coming up. According to the Daily News, they also looked into 500 reported sightings with law enforcement in all states and Canada. They had a crack house at 113th Street and Lenox Avenue demolished when a caller said they could find one of the boys there. The police also traveled to Puerto Rico, St. Croix, and St. Thomas. Housing detective Julia Sill said, "We had leads that a cult was emanating from the islands, that possibly children were being taken for sacrifice."
Of course they did, because like you said, this was that time frame when things like that were coming to surface.
It was. So does it shock you that people were calling in, providing tips, providing leads that had to do with that? No, it doesn't shock me at all, because that was rampant
right
back in the 80s. But the other thing I think you have to look at is they're traveling all over the world following up on leads. The entire United States, Canada, Puerto Rico, St. Croix, St. Thomas. It's not the entire world, but
yeah, but you can
they're
see
going the all over the place.
Yeah, the efforts are being made.
Yeah, absolutely. Police put out a profile of a male sex offender in the area and a female struggling with drug addiction whose child died or was taken by child welfare. They also looked into roughly 200 known pedophiles, child molesters, and sex offenders.
Again, it seems like the police are doing everything that they should be doing.
Yeah, I think the problem is they just don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. They're trying a lot of stuff, but they don't have any real lead. And the tips and stuff that they are getting, they turn out not to be correct, or they're pretty far-fetched. Talking about putting out profiles of a male sex offender, looking into known pedophiles and sex offenders. Okay, that would be a good idea. Because there's a good chance that it could be a person like that.
Sure.
Who abducted these children. What about this female whose child died or was taken by child welfare? What's the thought there, that she was trying to replace that child?
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I could come up with.
But she felt like she needed that connection with a child, so she went out and kidnapped one.
On January 14th, 1991. The police received a call about a child's body dumped in the woods 30 miles outside Atlantic City. The footprints didn't match Christopher, and the child's face was decomposed.
Sad.
Well, sad that they found a child. It wasn't either one of these children, but some other child was dumped in the woods. Very sad. In January 1997, a judge ordered Golden Eagle Mutual Insurance to pay Rosalie Glover a $10,000 death benefit. The judge said that Shane Walker must be presumed dead since it was unlikely he'd ever be found. According to the Daily News, the police didn't know about the insurance policy until they saw the court papers in 1997. Detective Frank Saez said, "We were never told that there was any kind of insurance. We have enough to be suspicious." Okay, so now they're heading in a different direction. The problem I have here is that they investigated people close to these children. I don't think it would have been that tough to find out whether or not, you know, one of these individuals had an insurance policy on one of these children. You know, this guy saying, "Well, we were never told," but did you dig into it and look and
right? Yeah.
Or you just didn't. And that's why you didn't know. Golden Eagle submitted documents showing that Rosa applied for insurance on July 29th, 1989. The policy was issued on August 1st. And then Shane went missing on August 10th. 7 weeks later, Rosa made her first attempt to collect, but she was turned away because she didn't have a death certificate.
Well, you can see where that might seem somewhat suspicious.
Yeah, I think they were suspicious just finding out about the life insurance. But I think when you look at the timing, that had to ramp up the suspicion even more. The timing is either an extremely unfortunate coincidence or it's a bad sign. Rosa told the Daily News, "When my son disappeared, I wasn't thinking about the insurance policy. It was the man who sold me the policy who suggested that I might be entitled to the money." She said she purchased the policy before taking Shane on a flight to Florida because all these planes were crashing at the time. Rosa's attorney said the timing was coincidental, and it very well could have been. But like I said, that's an incredibly sad coincidence.
It really is. I just think about when you say that all these planes are coming down, but wouldn't you be traveling with your child? I guess maybe the insurance would be for the family after the fact.
Yeah. I mean, normally my thought has always been, you know, with a child that young, what you really have is something to cover the funeral expenses. Sure. That's my way of thinking.
And that's expensive.
It is very expensive.
Even back then it was expensive.
It's always been expensive. Golden Eagle believed that Shane must be declared legally dead before they could pay the policy, but the judge said that under state law, any person missing for 3 years who cannot be found is presumed dead, so a formal declaration was unnecessary. Age progression photos of Christopher and Shane have been developed to show what they may look like as adult men. In 2021, the MCMEC released new images of Shane and Christopher as adults. The police have received tips even in recent years, but they have never heard from or located Christopher or Shane. And my thought is, Gibbs, if they are still alive, if they were abducted and you know, sold to a family who raised them, would they have any idea who they really are? And my thought is no.
Yeah, I don't think they would. I mean, what reason would they have to question their identity?
Yeah, they were so young. But, you know, that's a big if they're still alive. Unsolved Mysteries covered the case in 2020. They also covered the Carlina White case, which was mentioned by detectives back in 1989. On August 4th, 1987, Carlina was kidnapped from a Harlem hospital when she was only 19 days old. Carlina's parents took her to the hospital for a fever. Her abductor was a woman posing as a nurse. Carlina was raised by this woman, Ann Petway, in Connecticut. She grew up with the name Nedra Nance. Carlina became suspicious of her mother when she had her daughter in 2004 and needed insurance. When she submitted her birth certificate, she was told it was possibly a forgery. Ann Petway revealed that she was not Carlina's biological mother and said that her real mother abandoned her. So I just got done saying, you know, what if these two boys are still alive?
Right.
Well, here's a story that proves that it does happen. According to Oprah Daily, Carlina was the one who solved her case. She saw that her daughter looked like her baby picture on the NCMEC website. She called their hotline and told them, "I don't know who I am." Ann Pettway turned herself in on January 23rd, 2011. In February 2012, she pleaded guilty to one count of kidnapping. On July 30th of that year, she was sentenced to 12 years in prison. Carlina was reunited with her parents, Joy White and Carl Tyson. If you want to read more about this story, New York Magazine published a really good article on it titled "Kidnapped at Birth" by Robert Kolker. And it's a good read. I suggest that, you know, anybody who wants to know more about it, check it out. But I think what Carlina's case does, and I kind of just foreshadowed it a minute ago, is that it does provide hope for parents of missing children.
Sure.
I mean, there are cases, and there have been some recently where, you know, it has been discovered so many years later that a child who was abducted is still alive and, you know, was raised by a family. They had no idea who they really were. So I do think there is a possibility that if Shane and Christopher were abducted, they were raised by people under a new identity. They have no idea that they are Christopher and Shane.
And would have no reason to think otherwise.
No, there would be no reason to question. Unless something happens like what happened to Carlina. Right. There's a need for some documentation, or there's blood drawn that somehow doesn't match your parents, and it comes up that, well, you obviously could not be their biological child. But like we said, there are age progression photos out there. Who knows how close they are? I mean, sometimes they're very close and sometimes they're not.
That would be really bizarre to go out on that site and see a picture of yourself.
And know it's you?
Yeah, be like, that's me.
Yeah. Well, the technology today is obviously very good.
Sure.
And computers can do amazing things. But if you recognize Christopher or Shane, you can email hotline@ncmec.org. So, you know, as we wrap up this case, it's a tough one because you're dealing with very young children who were abducted, and we have no idea what happened to them, but we don't know that they're not alive.
We don't.
And, you know, there was a little bit of an uplift when you think about Carlina's case. I mean, she was cared for. She grew up. She had her own child. Still terrible what happened to her.
And to her parents,
but uplifting in the fact that they were eventually reunited.
Right.
Could that happen with Shane and Christopher? I don't know, but I'm sure their parents are hoping that it's a possibility.
Maybe one day we'll read about it.
We got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Let's hear them.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. My name is Lena. I am active duty military and I live in San Diego, California. However, I am from Michigan. Hope there's no hard feelings over this past weekend. You know, go blue. Anyways, I am a huge fan of the podcast. You guys are just wonderful. I love listening to you guys. I found your podcast probably 3-4 months ago, and I listen to you every day when I drive. I drive a couple hours every day, so that's what I listen to every day. I was wondering if you've ever looked into the Christian Andriacco case. It's technically a solved case, and they say he committed suicide, but most people know that that just isn't true or plausible. And that was in 2014 in Meridian, Mississippi. Very, very interesting case. There's a podcast called Culpable all about it, and that goes well into it. Was wondering if you guys have ever looked into it. Anyways, thank you so much. You guys are awesome. I love what you do. Keep your own time ticking.
That name sounds so familiar.
It does. I was thinking the same thing.
I saw your face and you were like, did we do that? But yeah. I don't think we've done that case. We can look into it. I tend to shy away from cases where podcasts cover it exclusively, because obviously we're not going to be able to do it the same way that they do it. You know, if your whole podcast is about one case,
right?
Well, obviously you're going to do a really good job on it. You're going to spend your whole time focused on this one case. Obviously, right. You and I are focused on a different case each week, but it's definitely something we can look into and see if it would make for a good episode. I put it on Unsolved because of the way that she kind of talked about the case,
right.
Saying technically solved, but that most people don't think it is. So
really wasn't sure what she was talking about with Ishigan. I don't know. Did something happen this weekend?
You know. There were a lot of voicemails.
Yeah.
Obviously I can't play them all. You and I have to take that loss. And, I give props to Michigan. They whipped our rear ends and we're just gonna have to wait till next year and hope we can do better, man. That's all we can do.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. I just wanted to call and tell y'all how awesome y'all are and how much I enjoy the podcast and that y'all really helped me out on a bad year. And I found your podcast back in August when I needed it the most. And you really helped me get through some really difficult times. And thank you very much. Bye.
Well, that touched me. You know, we always say it makes us feel good.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that someone has to go through a hard time, whatever it may be.
Right.
But it is touching to think that we, in any small way, helped or made it easier or more tolerable. That's something that we never really thought about when we started this podcast, but it does give us a good feeling.
Yeah, and you could hear her choking up towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gets to us. Yeah. It does. But
she's doing okay.
In a good way.
Absolutely.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. My name is Juliana. I am from South Georgia, but I live in South Florida now. I'm calling to suggest a case or maybe just bring some awareness, because I don't know if there's enough to talk about it. When I was living in South Georgia, a series of tornadoes, or just one bad tornado, hit. And a family reported their little boy, Detrez Green, missing. He was 2 years old. This little boy has never been found, and the parents cannot produce a single picture of him. So a lot of people are like, oh, it's a hoax. This kid never existed. Like, in the age of social media, there's no way you don't have at least a digital picture of him. So I just thought that was an interesting case. It's always been kind of in the back of my mind. You know, does this kid actually exist? Did they take this to the media for some type of attention? But yeah, he's been missing for 5-6 years now, and no one's ever found him. So something that could be a little rabbit hole for you guys. So stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
All right. We'll definitely look into it. We do have that problem, right, where we look into especially unsolved cases. And some of them are very fascinating, but there's just not enough information out there to, you know, produce an entire episode, a full episode.
Yeah, fortunately. But we'll see what we can find out. But
yeah.
Went from South Georgia to South Florida. Went that Georgia-Florida line.
You just had to get that in there,
didn't I?
All right, buddy. That is it for another case of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.